Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Strange Pathways. I am your host, Scott Mort. I hope you're having a great week. I'm still having a week. My hearing, sadly, has not improved. My blood pressure has, though. So I'm going to be thankful for the good thing. I'm not going to have a stroke. I'm not going to have a vicious heart attack. My blood pressure is down to manageable levels. The new medication I'm on is doing great. So I'm going to be happy for that and hopeful that the hearing will return to normal. I'll take any good vibes you've got. Prayers, send them my way. Be happy for them. I kind of need them right now, honestly. With that being said, on to this week's tales. Our first tale is going to take us back to April of 1999, Yerevan, Armenia. Around half a month before the main occurrence, Spartak, an 11-year-old lad, shared with his friends an extraordinary dream he experienced, encountering an extraterrestrial robot who assured him of its forthcoming visit, telling him, "Do not fear." This alien automaton prophesied its interaction with him and five other boys during their playtime in the schoolyard. Shortly thereafter, a quintet of boys engaged in a game of soccer behind the school. Two boys departed to get water, leaving the remaining three sprawled on the grass, gazing toward a nearby vineyard. Suddenly, their attention was seized by the descent of a UFO toward the vacant lot adjacent to that vineyard. The spherical craft was adorned with twinkling lights, made of a shiny material and set down around 300 meters away from the schoolyard. The boys later would estimate the size to be no more than 5 or 6 meters. And its diameter, just about 10, maybe 15 meters. The boys went on to say that this craft split into two halves like a tangerine. Other witnesses who saw this, they said the UFO had a small dome on the top and an open hatch. Now this brilliant UFO was encircled with yellow and red lights, and there was a row of 6 circular portholes that emitted light positioned around the rim of the center. After this craft split open in front of the children, 3 or 4 robots, about 3.5 meters in height, walked out of the UFO and all around the craft. Each robot would go to a different area. Now these robots, they were exactly the same in appearance. 2 or 3 of these robots would occasionally bend down to the ground, looking at it, collecting soil samples. But one of these extraterrestrial robots began moving towards the schoolyard, and thus then, the witnesses. There's a fence around the vineyard. It's about 1.5 meters high, but these are giant robots. Being that they're 3.5 meters tall, it easily crosses the wire fence around the vineyard, but there is a taller fence surrounding the children's school. It cannot walk across it. This robot then changed into a large blue globe of light about 3 feet in diameter and rolled like a ball, a large blue glowing ball of light along the fence and then down the other side. Once it reaches the ground, it changes itself back into the robot and continues walking towards the children. The two other boys who went to get water, they've returned. All five of these children are now witnessing this event exactly as Spartak's dream had predicted. One of these robots approaches the boys, frozen in fear. The boys are terrified, paralyzed. They're so close, they're able to see the skin of this robotic entity, grayish metallic in color. A circular helmet that covers the robot's head with two visors in the front, two small vertical antennas on the top. There's this light on its forehead and a control panel with buttons on the upper part of his right leg. There's a smaller panel with just one large button at the same spot on his left leg. Now these legs, let's talk a little bit about them. These legs are kind of encircled in something that kind of look like knee leggings, and they end in broad feet. These are like, these feet, they're like oval-shaped platforms. The children, terrified, they can't remember how many fingers these robots have. But they thought it was 3 or 4, and these fingers are thick and they're sharpened. One of the boys tries to run. A beam of light shoots out from one of the robots and knocks him to the ground. There's actually a red burn mark left on the boy's hand that's still visible months later. It was still visible. Remember, this is April. It's still visible in October. And the local doctors look at it and they can't diagnose what kind of burn it is. They just know it's not going away. The robot and the boys begin to talk to each other. The boys are speaking out loud. The robot's answers, though, they're not vocally given. They're displayed on a screen on its chest area. The boys were so stunned by this whole thing, and they're terrified. They can't remember how long they spoke with the robot. They saw different types of inscriptions and images display on the robot's screen. There were some symbols the boys couldn't interpret, but they were able to see their own names written in their native tongue, Armenian, on the screen. And every time one of the boys spoke, their name would appear on the screen. Most of the talk was about their country. And the boys do remember this phrase, "Now your country is in big difficulty, but we will be helping you." The boys, the terror is there, but the boys are feeling sleepy. And they feel hypnotized. They feel like this robot is somehow scanning their minds. Each one of the boys, even though their recollections beyond this point are mixed, but each one of the boys remembers that the robot projected a beam of light from its forehead, causing one of the boys to start levitating. Now, another boy tries to hold his friend down. He grabs him by the legs. He's also levitated. Both are hovering in mid-air for several seconds before they fall unceremoniously to the ground. The robot then walks around the schoolyard, bending down, picking up stones. It scratched one of its hands. This robot scratched one of its hands, and the hand had this strange reddish tint that it turned. The robot then returns to the field. It transforms into a rolling blue ball, climbs the fence, transforms back to a robot, gets into the craft. The craft closes, and then it propels itself up like a spring, hovers for a moment, flies away. I mean, it could be children making up a story. Except the grass where the boys said this encounter happened turned a different color. Researchers found numerous footprints on the ground. Footprints 20 centimeters in diameter, 5 to 10 centimeters deep. So what did the boys see? Was it aliens? Was it robots? The point is, the evidence all says the boys saw something. This was not a story that they made up. Made up stories don't change the color of grass and leave footprints. These five boys saw something. Our next tale is going to take us to Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, 2017. Great day for Thunder Bay. I'm a big fan of Letterkenny, and you all know I'm a big fan of phantomsandmonsters.com as well, and that's where I got this tale. Beautiful website. I strongly suggest it. If this is your first time here, you're going to find out as you listen to later episodes, you can count on at least one story a week coming from Phantoms and Monsters. If you go to Thunder Bay, you're going to find that as you get out of the town, there are these little swamps, bogs. Not a lot goes on. You can't really build in them. And there's not a lot living in there aside from frogs, muskrats, what have you, birds, that sort of thing. Back in 2017, the witness, who goes by the name Kay, decides to take a break from their university studies and go get some drinks at a local bar with his friends. It's a little bit after 3 a.m. They only live about 15 minutes away. It's Friday night, Saturday morning. They decide to walk home. Play it safe. They don't want to get into a car accident because they're a bit tipsy. And they only live 15 minutes. So Kay gets halfway home. And he notices something at one of these bogs. From what Kay could see, it seemed like there was a light coming out of the water. And they try to play it off. I'm just drunk. It's my mind playing tricks on me. But I'm also drunk, so I'm going to go check out what this is. And that's what Kay does. Kay walks over to the light. And what Kay sees has got to convince him that they shouldn't have. A giant slug, leech-like creature, starts to crawl out of the bog. And it's got arms. Two very muscular front arms. this thing begins to crawl out even further. Kay gets a really good look at its body. It's approximately 6 feet long. Doesn't have any kind of legs, just front arms and a slimy underside. And it's moving really fast, and it leaves behind that noticeable slime trail like a snail does, or a slug. It's bioluminescent. That's what the glow was. There's this bulge on its forehead, and this bulge extends down the spinal column, and it's glowing. Kay's stunned. Kay's body goes completely numb. This thing is not noticing Kay. He's headed in kind of a 90 degree angle from what Kay's walking. Kay wonders, does this thing not have great eyesight? Maybe it's blind. Maybe it doesn't have a sense of smell. It's not really drawn to Kay. But Kay goes, what is this? And that grabs its attention. This slug creature stops dead in its tracks, turns its head towards Kay, and two large black eyes open up and stares directly at him. This thing is not blind. And as soon as this slug thing sees him, that bioluminescence vanishes. And Kay's blind. It's pitch black. And Kay does what I think any of us would do. Kay screams. And he can hear this creature charge him. He can hear its large body cut through that bog grass, that tall, thick grass. Kay picks out the nearest street lamp they can find and runs as fast as they can through the grass until they get into that light. Is it safe? Probably not, but it's comforting. There's no sign of the creature behind him at this point. Maybe it just wanted to scare Kay out of the bog. This thing was moving fast. It could have caught a drunk Kay. Kay goes home. Never goes back to the bog. Finishes his degree. Moves back to Toronto. And does not go back. There's a swamp close to where I live. Well, lived. Fenzel Swamp, also known as Cranberry Swamp. And I often wondered, what lives just beneath that dark water? Swamps are a very beautiful place. I absolutely love walking through swamps. They're gorgeous, they're beautiful. The wildlife, the plant life, the food. At least with Cranberry Swamp, ironically, blueberries. Blueberries all over the place in Cranberry Swamp. But what's there? If I was something that wanted to hide, I think a bog would be a great place to do so. Our last tale is coming from I Love It and I Hate It, both at the same time, Reddit. This was posted by user LEDN42. When lead, I'm going to call this person Led. When Led was very, very young, they would stay at their grandmother's place quite often. Led's grandmother had this painting that hung in the living room of her house. Now, this painting was of two women at a piano, both of them wearing yellow dresses. One was listening, pointing at the music, almost like they were teaching the other woman to play. And that's where the other woman was, playing the piano. On many of those occasions where Led would sleep over at their grandmother's house as a child, they would see the figures in the painting move at night. Now, they weren't calling to her. They weren't trying to communicate with her, but they were just sort of acting a scene out, almost like a GIF. And yes, I do pronounce it GIF. Constant looped actions. Now, she could see the figures strike the keys. One could see the foot tapping to the rhythm. Other woman would nod her head in approval or disapproval, judging the performance. Every once in a while, they would actually tap the sheet music to draw the attention to something missed in the piece. Now, there is no sound to this. This is all silent. But Led was so young, and she'd seen this happen so often, there was nothing paranormal about it to her. It was just something that happened. In her mind, some paintings move on their own. In fact, whenever Led went to see Harry Potter for the first time, Harry being astonished at the moving paintings, that was Led's first sign that, oh, this wasn't normal. A few decades pass. Led remembers that painting. She hasn't seen that painting in many, many years. So she goes to her very old grandmother and goes, you know that painting of the women in yellow playing the piano? Where is that? And her grandmother goes, I wrapped it up in a cloth and locked it away in the closet. Led goes, whenever I was young, I must have been dreaming or something, but I thought I'd see the painting move at night. And her grandmother levels her a dead serious look and says, my dear, why do you think I don't put it up there anymore? Thank you for telling me you saw it too, because I thought I was crazy for all these years. Led has looked for the painting. Can't find it. Now, her grandmother is a bit of a hoarder and has a lot of storage units filled with antiques. So it may be in one of those storage units. Or maybe she gave it away. Her memory's not as good as it once was. And maybe that hangs in the living room of somebody else right now. And right now, if you're listening to this very, very late at night, maybe there's another child watching that same piano lesson play out. Is it malevolent? I don't think so. I don't think it's benevolent either. I just think it is. This is one of those cases where it just is. It's not good. It's not evil. It just is. Thank you for joining us here again on Strange Pathways. If you are having mental health trouble dealing with a paranormal incident, please reach out to the Opus Network, www.opusnetwork.org. Our Twitter is Pathways Strange. Instagram, Strange Pathways Podcast. Our Facebook, we'll have a couple of images up on each one of those social media sites dealing with the cases here today. And if you'd like to reach out, say hi. If you have a story that you want to get off your chest, if something amazing has happened to you and you'd like to be interviewed, reach out to me, strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. And while you're at it, please go over and check out this week's episode of The Cult of SMMI. I believe it's the most important thing I've ever done in podcasting. I had an interview today. And what I was told happened shook me to the core. I went up. My wife was on the second floor taking classes, and I went up and I just wanted to be with her. It was disturbing. It was absolutely disturbing, but it needs to get out there. Please listen. That'll be on an upcoming episode. We're getting them all out there. And I don't know how long the cult of SMMI is going to last. It lasts as long as it needs to last. That's my answer. But thank you once again. Take care of yourselves and each other. Oh, a bit of weirdness today. I was watching a YouTube video on missing persons, and the gentleman ended it with the phrase, take care of yourselves and each other. And I'm wondering, did I accidentally take that? Because I seem to remember my father saying the same thing to me. But you know what? If I did take it, I do apologize. But I think it's a beautiful sentiment. And if it's okay, I'd like to keep it. So once again, take care of yourselves and each other.